Hi there, welcome back. This is the Developer's Guide to Windows 10. I'm Andy Wigley, and with me...
Hi, I'm Shane Chohan.
Right, okay, so in this session, we're going to have a look at what it means to move an app you developed for 8.1 onto 10. And it's interesting even if you're not planning to do that, because it's a nice kind of good look at a lot of the kind of details of what a UWP app is.
Yep, shows the progression we've made.
Yeah, that's right. So actually, we're going to first of all have a look at the different ways, the migration paths, how you can move from different starting points into taking your app and converting it and porting it, migrating it onto UWP.
Yeah.
One of those three, anyway. In order to do it, there's a little upgrade utility that I've created. Absolutely not an official release, but kind of helps a little bit with a lot of the steps. And we'll have a look at the kind of issues that you might actually encounter. There's no hard and fast rule here, you know, obviously your mileage may vary,
yes.
So, but we're going to take you through a worked example of a, not just a hello world, something a little bit more sophisticated than that, and give you
yes.
So some of the things that you might come across. All right, so why would you want to do this anyway? I mean, the first thing to say about any app that you have already created for 8.0 or 8.1 is that those apps will continue to run on the same kind of device family where they were on 8.
Yes.
So if you created a phone app for 8.1, it will continue to run on Windows 10 Mobile. So you're not forced to upgrade, you can still carry on. But obviously, if you did just take that step of doing a new version that's built for UWP, for one thing, the good news is you'll be able to reuse a huge amount. I mean, they're very close. UWP is a kind of an extension and additional functionality on top of the app model that we had before. With the huge big plus, of course, is we've got one SDK, one OS across all of these,
it's
one
the
dev platform.
Discoverability as well, because you can reach way more devices on a UWP.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you could just keep your 8.0 or 8.1 app, and it'll run on a specific subset of Windows 10 devices. But who wouldn't want to go for that? That 1 billion plus devices, you know, that you could have. So that's why you want to think about doing this migration to actually use the new APIs and also expand your potential audience out to all of the users of all the different devices that are running Windows 10. So let's look at kind of at a very high level. You know, if I'm starting from here, what can my experience be when I expect to get to UWP? How will that work out? So the first one is thinking about an app you might have developed for Windows Desktop in 8.0 or 8.1. So this is a Windows Store app. So it's obviously designed for being a full-touch, immersive application. Now, this, to move it onto Windows 10, is not particularly problematic.
No.
So, you know, the XAML is all the same. Your code is will all pretty much all run. There's a few little things we'll talk about, like obviously the charms bar has gone, so you need to think about creating, you know, if you want to, you'd need to put some UI to actually handle that. There's all the back button stuff, the fun thing that we talked about yesterday, handling that. But, you know, we did the navigation and back button session yesterday, and actually it's not too complicated to add back navigation in. But of course, now the potential is that you're not only running on desktop, you're running on smaller devices and maybe even smaller if you want to, or even maybe even bigger. So you probably you'll need to do some work around your user experience to actually create a good UX that works, that actually an adaptive, responsive UI that will work well across these different things. And the other thing to say as well is, obviously on 8.0.8.1, those apps would only ever run either full screen or docked to one side of the screen. So, but now, of course, on 10, they run in a window, so it's very much more flexible. The window size is a bit more flexible. So, yeah, you need to do some UX work. But it's still the same XAML. You know, it's not like we're asking you to use a radically different technology or anything. So it shouldn't be too much of a problem. Right, well, from Windows Phone 8.1, well, same story for the code, because Windows Phone 8.1 WinRT app, a store app. So this, now Windows Phone 8.1, you could actually create apps using Windows Phone Silverlight, or you could use Windows Store XAML, effectively.
The runtime,
So this is the one we're talking about here, the Windows runtime version, which is the same technology that allows Windows 8.1 universal apps to happen, because it is very much the same as we've got on the desktop.
Yes.
So it's a similar sort of story. Your UI that you've created actually will move very easily across to a UI for your small screens, and will also work quite nicely when you're on when the window has been shrunk to its smallest on desktop. But obviously you're going to need to create some UI that's going to handle somebody using it on a bigger screen. So again, same story really, a bit of UX work. But your code, not going to have any much problems with that really. Windows 8.1 Universal Apps. Now you might imagine moving from Windows 8.1 Universal to Universal Windows Platform Apps, well Windows Apps, mm-hmm. should be pretty easy. But actually, well, it is. I mean, you know, the code is underneath is going to be fine. But you've kind of, when you're building an 8.1 Universal app, you've actually got kind of two UIs. So yeah, you just need to repurpose that, take those UIs, and they actually become your narrow and wide sort of UIs. So
in your Visual State, essentially.
You can just take that and use that, and you'll be able to cut and paste a lot of your XAML, mm-hmm. but you need to kind of merge that into a single adaptive UI.
Yeah.
Or, well, actually in the adaptive UI session, we did talk about some other techniques like XAML views might come in useful for this one, actually, you know. So
true.
You can actually salvage a lot of your UI and all of your code. So again, you know, it's pretty much happy days here. Obviously a little bit of work to kind of rationalize things. And then you do end up here, you end up with a single binary that runs everywhere where you're coming from. A solution that allowed you to share a really high percentage of your code, but actually, as part of the build process, you ended up with two binaries, which is by and by, really.
Yeah.
Silverlight apps. Now, this is not such a great story, because Windows Phone Silverlight apps, very, very popular. We have a lot of developers who love building. I mean, that's the path I've come through as well.
Same here.
Yeah, we've all come through Phone Silverlight. Yeah. Very nice, but I mean, it's... You want to be moving to WinRT XAML anyway, really, because it's much more performant. It's where we are investing and adding loads of great new features.
The APIs are different. Like, if you look at the async APIs that are available on RT compared to Silverlight, there's a big contrast there. And, and, you know, there's a reason why we've gone to an async model, and it's just more faster, and it's great user experience. So.
Well, that's right. And although they're both XAML, they're the newer XAML that we are using today in UWP, it's like you say, it's been designed for speed, right, you know, and really architected to cut out some of the slower bits and pieces that we had. So Silverlight is not as performant, but the apps that you write on Windows Phone Silverlight, they'll still run on Windows 10 Mobile. Let's be clear about this. We're not forcing you to upgrade until you're ready. But if you're going to invest in your app and look to the future and expand beyond mobile to actually other targets, then you need to move to UWP. Now,
I think it's what users will come to expect anyway, because consumers will be so used to, you know, these first party and third party apps running on the Windows runtime.
Yeah.
They'll expect certain contracts to be there, and obviously your older apps will still be looking slightly dated after a while.
That's right. So, there's quite a lot of rewrite work here, although, you know, your structure, your concept and everything will be, you know, should be fine for that. So, in summary, you know, your any WinRT Windows Runtime application code will need a few changes. The Windows Runtime XAML UI will port across fairly easy. You'll be able to cut and paste and salvage a lot of that sort of thing. Silverlight 7.x, Windows Phone Silverlight 7.5 and 8.0/8.1 apps. You're talking about a rebuild job, but it's not like radically different. Yeah. But you are going to have to rewrite this. Now there is a third-party porting tool that is coming along down the line, and we're going to be able to announce more details about that soon. But that tooling is meant to automate a lot of that process, so that you can get a long way starting from a Silverlight 8.1 phone app. You can go quite a long way towards getting to take a lot of the kind of
You should try and take away about 80% of the legwork.
That will make this job much easier. And we are aware that we have a large community of Silverlight app developers who are ready to take their apps and bring them in, and that's what we want as well.
Absolutely. So are there going to be any sort of Visual Studio sort of project conversion tools here for these two? Will the projects just automatically convert, like, you know, they've done in the past, or is this going to be a bit of Lego? Because we've now got two projects that are essentially coming into one, or three in some cases with a shared project.
Yeah, so automating this, so the short answer is no, we do not have any plans to offer tooling, official tooling. As you'll see, yours truly has created a little PowerShell script that helps go some of the way. And I did this in the tech preview and shipped it for people, for Windows Insiders, and somebody took it and then turned it into a Visual Studio extension and this sort of thing. So, I mean, this is something for the community can perhaps kind of step in and do some interesting stuff there.
And I mean, there's some executive decisions you have to make when doing the port anyway, so it's not like it's an easy one. One port's going to work for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, when we were moving from earlier versions to Windows Phone 8.0 to 8.1, you could right click and say upgrade to or retarget to 8.1. Yeah. That's right, and it would make the manifest changes. And that's because the technology switch wasn't so big.
Drastic,
but in this case, with the complication, but the shared project stuff that you typically have in an 8.1 universal app, and some of the other stuff, actually automating that isn't particularly straightforward. So. No, so the official Visual Studio line is file new project, copy your files across. So,
yes,
but, okay. But I've done a utility that will help a little bit, but it's absolutely not an official offering. So there we go. We can talk about the charms bar and that sort of thing in a little while. So let's actually go through a case study so we can actually examine some of these issues. So the project file and the package manifest basically have a bunch of changes. It's all documented on MSDN. So you can actually go in and make these changes manually if you like. NuGet version 2 to version 3. Actually, I don't want you to get hung up about that. I just mention it because it's an obvious change in that your project.json,
it's no longer a packages.config. Yeah. So the file you see is different, but actually, you never know which one you're using when you're in Visual Studio actually searching for packages. The user interface is just very similar.
That's right.
You feel at home.
Yeah, exactly. So there is no wizard that can say right-click on an 8.1 project and turn it into a UWP one. But there is on GitHub, this on the Win10 Dev Guide MVA project upgrade utility, there is a PowerShell script that I've written which will do most of that work and actually does do that for you. It doesn't do everything, and it's absolutely not an official Microsoft offering, so let's get
you,
that clear.
You were just being helpful.
I wrote it myself because I had a bunch of samples that needed upgrading, so I did it to ease my burden, and then I thought, well, you know, this is actually good enough for other people to get the goodness
but
of
you
this.
Share the love, yeah.
Yeah. This is my utility. It's just you run it in a PowerShell, and it has this massively informative UI and tells you what it's doing. It doesn't do absolutely everything, so it doesn't promise to do everything, but it gets you a long way down the road. So it comes as a PowerShell script, but you need script execute allowed, or you can just simply run that at the command prompt. You can run the batch file, and that does the necessary for you.
It's execution policy,
Yeah, that's right. And then at the end of that, it spits out the other side a Windows Universal project. So you can then start, and it's kind of valid up to a point, and then you can then start trying to run it and compile it and see what happens next. So UWP apps uses NuGet version 3. This is actually kind of one of those interesting things more than anything. It's not absolutely a calamity or anything, but you used to have a packages.config file, which was this XML file, which described NuGet packages. And it's now a project.json file, which is a JSON file. But it essentially tells you the same information.
It's similar to what I think all web users are used to.
Right. But actually, the impact is more on your disk space than anything. Because whenever you used NuGet version 2 and you referenced a NuGet package, it would store copy it all into the solution root folder. And obviously, if you had dozens of projects, even if they're all referencing the same NuGet package, you'd have dozens of copies of those NuGet packages.
It was the same when people used to send you a solution. And I remember, if they obviously deleted the packages directory because they're trying to keep the zip file small, you load it up and then it starts downloading loads of stuff.
Yeah.
That won't happen now, right?
No, that doesn't happen because And also the packages were references were resolved at the point when you used the NuGet manager and added the reference. So it would pull it down, take a copy of it, stick it into there. And it made actually collaboration between teams awkward and that sort of thing. So now actually you use the NuGet package manager and you say, oh, okay, I want this. Yeah. But actually the package references are resolved at build time. Yeah. And any packages that are downloaded, actually they it just keeps a cache. And if you go down into your users, oh there you go, see users, my username, so Andy, see users and a name, there's a .NuGet folder there, and that's where it stores it, which means that
you have one copy
of it for all your solutions. So that's really a big improvement. But in terms of what it does, how you know what it does for you, adding references to packages, no difference.
Yep.
Your artwork will need updating.
Yes.
So you may need to change tile sizes and scaling. So the scale factors, as you can see from the package manifest that we are supporting, are 100, it's a curious order, 100, 125, 150, 200, and 400.
It's because their recommended sizes come first. So the 400, 200, 100 are recommended.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And
so
the
it's recommended underneath. Those ones we don't really recommend.
Because we can do a middle scale based on your...
Okay, yes. Yeah. Now, if you're only going to supply one of them, we suggest you actually supply the scale 200, because that's going to be cover the most, give good quality for the majority of devices. Really high-res systems, we just scale it up and it'll probably still look okay. And lower resolution systems, we just scale it down, and again, it will look okay. But you'll probably need to change it, particularly because if you did a far new project for a Windows Phone 8.1, for example, it was scale 250 was the default. We're not even supporting that anymore, so you're going to have to do a little bit of, get your favorite graphics editor and a bit of resizing.
A lot of it's also to do with the fact that we're now using effective pixels.
Yes.
So that makes a difference.
Rendering. We've unified the scaling system across all of our devices.
Yes.
So this is, you've got one set of artwork which covers for everything. So.
Correct, yeah.
So a little bit of change there. These scale factors actually are also aligned with what's typically used on Android and iOS. So if you are doing cross-platform, you probably only need one set of artwork for it. Okay. Yeah, there you go. There's the new scale factors. 100, 200, 400, and there are some others as well. So it's a single scale factor system for all of our apps. This great alignment with other app platforms and guarantees consistent size across all of our different systems. And I was talking in the adaptive UI session yesterday about the 4-pixel grid being the magic number. A couple of other changes to bring to your attention. So in the app manifest, you used to put in there an element that said, if you wanted to allow the desktop window to be shrunk down, not the desktop window,
Yeah, it was the window size.
So yeah, so the window size, even though it's immersive and it's kind of full screen, but you could actually dock things side by side. So you used to put the minimum allowed size into the manifest. Yeah. It's no longer in there. So instead, you have to set it in code using the application view class. So there's a preferred launch view size method that you need to call, which obviously this only takes effect on a desktop device that's not in tablet mode.
It's anything that has like a browser, just a Chrome around the actual window.
And there's another method called set preferred min size. This is the equivalent of the old minimum width that you used to put in the manifest. But this is where you want to have that on there.
Impressive if anyone needs a 192x48.
Yeah,
that's a small screen. Yeah,
that is a small screen.
Won't be a band size, maybe.
Now, one thing you have to do is call this on your view before you call window activate. So it's right up the beginning of your on launch.
Because you don't want to go boom.
No, that's right.
Yeah, doing all this crazy stuff.
Ah, there's an example. There you go. 320x320.
Yep.
And, you know, have a good look at the MSDN documentation for lots more guidance. This gets into a bit more detail than we've got time for now. Okay, so let's go through a demo and then we'll kind of dig a bit deeper into some of the issues that this raises. So I've got an old favorite. This is the Contosa Cookbook. As you can see, this is a Windows Phone 8.1 Windows Runtime XAML app. And we've got the splash screen and you can see that it's quite rich. It's got lots of nice graphics on it and it's a pivot and all this kind of stuff. All lovely animations, and we also got the camera capture. You can take a picture of your use your imagination. That's meant to be a whatever that was, and a cook, some kind of cook, a dish, that sort of thing. So that's the that's going to be our test app for this. Now, first of all, let's go and convert it. So open the folder. This is where it is. I'm now going to open a command prompt, and I've got my conversion script that I wrote, the little PowerShell thing, which is over on my, where I stuck my GitHub stuff, not GitHub project, there we go, GitHub project upgrade utility, run upgrade to uwp.bat. So this is going to execute that. There we are, we've converted the CS proj, the package manifest, and the NuGet version 3 project.json stuff. Mm-hmm. Doesn't add in your packages, so you have to go back in and actually, it doesn't kind of figure out what packages you had before, so you have to go and add them again.
Yep.
And once we've done that, wait, there you go, even the design has come up. Already looking good. And you've got all these different, you know, different screen, different targets. There we go, shrinking down. So we've now already, it would appear, got a tablet view. Well, certainly the design is happy with that. And it's a universal Windows application. So already we've got something that Visual Studio is happy with. Let's try and build it and see what happens. Okay, we've got an error type or namespace name backpressed event args could not be found. Okay, this is the famous back button.
Yes.
This will trip you up if you're bringing a Phone 8.1 project forward. So what's all that about? So in our app class, we've got backpressed hardware buttons backpressed. So this is for the phone back button, which obviously you'd have in a Phone 8.1 app. So, but we get rid of that. And instead, we're going to do the new way of doing it, which is a universal Windows platform API. So it's not phone specific. System. Don't need the phone extension.
System Navigation Manager.
SDK. But instead, we've got the System Nav Manager, which is in windows.ui.core. And that has on it get for current view. And you notice I'm doing this at the end of my unlaunched, back requested plus equals. And then we're going to create ourselves a handler for that called app back requested. Now, what goes in that? Well, obviously, pretty much the same logic was in before, because it's just the frame.
Yep.
You're navigating back within the frame. So we can just copy and paste that down into here. And then we've got our back button handling. So let's try and build that again. And we kind of now going to run that and see how we get on. It's actually, this time it's compiled. Oh, well, okay, there's something wrong. That's obviously not. But look, our first screen's actually come up already. Oh, okay, here we go. A XAML parse exception. Cannot find a resource with the name key phone accent brush. So the phone accent brush allows the user's selected accent color to be used in your app. But that particular style doesn't exist. So actually we need to do something about it. There we go, phone accent brush.
It's got the squiggles.
So what we do to handle that is we go and create ourselves a new brush resource. There isn't a system supplied brush for the phone, for the selected system accent color. So we'll create one. Solid color brush, name equals accent brush, or whatever. That's just the key. Color equals, and then we do a theme resource for system accent color. There we go. So now we've got that we can use instead of the phone accent brush, and it's obviously going to work anywhere, work on desktop as well. So we just change that to our new accent brush, and that will achieve the same thing. Let's just scroll down and have a look for anything else in here. Okay, we've got some other styles. So these were phone specific list view styles. So I'm just going to, we can kind of tweak them later, but I'm going to change them to one of the built-in ones, which is caption text box style. That's good enough for now. Mm-hmm. You can always change fonts and everything, or do our custom style later on. We'll do another pass, but just to get this working. Let's have a look at the other main page, recipe detail page. Again, there's another one of those phone accent brushes, so we can get rid of that. Another one down there. And I think it's all looking like we're good. So, okay, let's try and run it again. And there's the artwork. Yes, yeah, so let's fix that artwork before we do run it again. So that's all the 240 was the phone one before, yep, wasn't it? Which we don't do anymore. So I have actually already pre-prepared some. I need to go and get rid of the old artwork, and I've already got some at the correct scale, which is 200. And also change the orientation of the splash screen, which is why it was all kind of weirdly distorted. So I'm just going to drag that in and copy that in. Now we've got our nice resized, scaled, properly scaled thing. So it's picked that one up already. That one we can go and select. We've got a 150 by 150, I think. Yep, there we go. Yep, that one's plugged in. The wide one. Yeah, we can go and pull that one in. There's the wide 310 by 150 at scale 200, which is. So we just make sure in the manifest we're going to select all that new artwork so that we're all nicely configured for that. This one's interesting. This little one, this little funny name with the plated one, that's actually a little icon you see in Windows Explorer and this sort of thing. So that's a new one that you could choose to supply. Or if you're sharing from one app to another. All right, let's try this now. Hopefully our splash screen should come. Yay, look, that beautiful splash screen.
A lot better.
Yeah, and our app's looking all right. We can go off to recipes, and it's all looking great.
Yeah,
and the pivot just works because that's now a universal control. It's all looking good. Oh, the camera button doesn't
work.
Camera doesn't work. But actually, you know, very little effort. We've already got, we've turned a phone app into a UWP app that's running on desktop. So that's pretty good. What about that camera? Why did that not work? Let's go and have a look at that. So, an impressive list of using statements. But I'm going to go drill down and find that event handler. Is the, not the button share click, the
photo click.
Button photo click. So here we are. We're using a file open picker, setting some properties, and that's good. And then, oh, okay, this is compiler conditionals, because this was code that was taken from a shared universal app. So there's some Hashif Windows app and Hashif phone app. So let's get rid of those. Now, that's interesting. Look, it says that Windows Phone Store app, pick single file and continue, is obsolete. So much cheering in the aisles from phone developers. That was a never loved API. Instead, we now converge back onto the desktop Windows API version. So we now got that all. Now, this was to handle the weird reactivation that we had on Windows Phone 8.1. So we can get rid of that. And this was also plumbing code associated with that about the file open picker continuation, which was Phone 8.1 only. It was brought in to handle low memory phone devices that couldn't suspend and recover the way desktop did. But we've done some engineering and now it all works.
So you're deleting a lot.
So deleting all that phone specific stuff. And now we're just now back to a nice clean universal Windows. It works the same across everything. We're just using the APIs as they were intended. All right, so, okay, and what else are we going to do? Let's just Navigation Manager, get for current view. Let's set the, not that one, I didn't mean that. I need to get the root frame. I'm going to set navigated on here and a plus equals. We're going to set up here to have the back handling for the desktop, because actually there was no back handling for that.
Yes, true.
So every time we navigate to that, there was no way to navigate back on desktop. So we needed one for that. Yeah. So we're going to put in here the shell drawn back button. So if root frame can go back, we navigate back. So we're going to say if we can go back, we want to show the shell drawn app view back button. So we set the visibility of that to be
visible.
And if it can't go back, then we don't want to show it. So obviously we just do the inverse of that.
Because like you said, this is like application wide, so it persists.
So yes, you need to toggle it. Once you've set it, it's set until you unset it. So now we should actually have on desktop, we should have a back button as well. So here we go, we're on the launch page, there's nowhere to go back to. So now you've got top left, we've got a back button because we can go back. And there we go, and that sort of thing. And hopefully the camera should work as well. Yep, we can go off and pick an image of some food. There we are, there's a nice kitchen scene. And so all that seems to be working. And we've got back works and all life is good. So you know, that's really kind of most of the steps that we needed to do this porting. Of course, let's just check it still runs on the phone as well.
Yep.
Which we hope it should
you
do.
You might have gone a step backwards.
Yeah, we might have got it working on desktop and failed. It no longer works from there. So, okay, that launches all right. It's looking all right. Some of the sizing is a bit, maybe we want to change, do a bit of tweaking of the UI, but that's kind of, you know, the final gloss on it, really. Yeah. It's all functional, so all pretty good. We've got the Windows 10 styling and everything. Happy days.
Yeah, that's great.
That's all right. It's not really, too much of a problem. Right, now, so, you know, in summary, have a look for these hash ifs. You may need to reference the platform extension indicators. We didn't need to do in this. There might be a few deprecated APIs, not many, very few. Have a look at your styles. Charms bar, there was a question about that before. We'll talk about that. And then obviously you need to make sure you do a bit of tweaking on your UI. Yep. So look at those in more detail. Yeah, have a look for any hash ifs anywhere.
Just do a search on
just
the solution,
do a search
really,
for that, Have a look for Windows underscore phone app or Windows underscore app. Mm-hmm. We've got our own conditional for Windows underscore UWP app. For the new one, if you are using, you know, shared libraries or shared code, which you can still, of course, use. But have a look for that and then just think about what the situation was that it was handling. Why was there this conditional stuff going on? And obviously, we've now got a converged UWP thing, so we don't have to worry too much. There's not a lot of problems there, really. We just need to come back and replace this platform-specific code with a universal solution for whatever it is. Just confirm that about the handling of the back button. So in desktop, we've got that enable Chrome back button, and we've got that single converged back button API. So rather weird on here. So there we go. This is the System Navigation Manager get for current view, app view back button visibility. That's the one that paints on the Chrome, the top of the Chrome when it's in a windowed mode, puts you that back button on it. You'll get one automatically if you're on tablet mode, by the way.
Okay.
And then you can hook up the Universal Windows Platform Back Requested API, which automatically gets triggered whether the user presses a hardware back button on a phone or the Chrome drawn back button on the title bar. It's any back button. Yeah. That's your Universal
Back Requested. That's the one to use.
You may need to add ref for platform extensions. Only if there's platform specific to do. In many cases, you won't. But we talked about this yesterday about adaptive code and what it really is. You know, the majority of all of your application code and all the needs of a general application is going to be found in the UWP API set. And in the most cases, you probably don't need to call any extension SDKs. But if you do, they're there. You can make use of them and check out the pattern that we went through in the adaptive code session. Oh, there we go. There's an adaptive code sample. Maybe, for example, on phone, there is a camera hardware buttons API. Don't use the back requested one. That's what you used to use it for. But I've just told you about the UWP API for that. But maybe your app is a camera pressed. You want to actually detect the camera button being pressed. Maybe that's just one example.
Yeah.
Maybe a better example of this. Well, there's the, GPIO.
GPIO controller for IoT devices. Yeah. You might have some additional stuff on cellular for phone, maybe.
So you're going to need to look around. There's kind of these edge cases for platform-specific stuff. You will find occasionally there'll be a few deprecated APIs. There's not actually a lot, really. No. The main one that I called out there was the and continue APIs, the much unloved and continue APIs. Which were necessary on Windows Phone. They were brought in because our low-end Windows Phone devices are very constrained, and when you call something like this file open picker, which the proper call is pick single file async, where the caller would sort of suspend, the pick single file UI is put up by the shell and allows the user to go and pick a file, and then when they have picked a file, app gets reactivated. But there wasn't sufficient memory on those devices at that time to handle that without the calling app.
Suspending one to hydrate the other.
Yeah, that's right. So we had to have this unique API pattern, the and continue for that, and lots of extra code and in activation code. And, it wasn't complicated, it was just unpleasant work. You don't have to do that anymore because pick single file async works, and we've done a lot of engineering down in the kernel and down in the app platform to make sure that that works. I showed you this. You might well find some undefined styles, so you need to just go through your XAML styles and substitute with suitable alternatives. Check the scaling out, though. That didn't really come out from that sample I just showed you now. I mean, obviously, I showed you about refreshing your tile assets, the scaling on those. But
the
also,
images themselves sometimes render slightly funny if they're not.
But also, there's an interesting gotcha. On the left is an example of an 8.1 app, and on the same is a UWP app. Those are using the same named styles, and they're actually clearly not compatible. And also, the platform scaling has changed.
Well, you can see
140 on the left, 150 there.
The effective pixel algorithm slightly different to what it used to be.
So in converging, what we've done with converging the scaling factors across all our platforms and coming up with this one system that works across all of them, you're going to see on certain devices a bit of a shift from what it was on 8.1. So you just might need to change some font sizes. But basically, what we're saying here is just review your UI and make sure that it looks great on 10.
You don't want it to just compile and run. You want to make sure you ran through and tested thoroughly.
I mean, that's an extreme case. Title text block style on 8.1, the font size was 14.667.
Very precise.
And a UWP font size is 24. So that's quite a bit different. But then the effective pixel size may not have been exactly the same. But anyway, so just check that out. Right, what about the charms bar? So the charms bar was where the user could swipe in from the right-hand side, and you get all those icons up, one of which would be like settings, share and search. And in fact, search kind of got deprecated anyway with 8.1. And the charms bar is not available on Windows 10 devices. No. We've moved on. We decided that wasn't really a user experience that
it doesn't
really
work
worked.
Once you've got things in sort of like a window, right?
Yeah,
because before they're
all
full screen, so that made sense.
That's right.
But now it doesn't.
Now, if you've got an app that you built for 8.1 and you don't convert it, it's running on a Windows 10 system, which it will do, then what you see is in the title bar,
it's like a little hamburger.
A little hamburger, a menu, and you hit that, and the charms bar options, search, settings, share, that sort of thing, they appear in there just as a drop down menu. So those apps will still operate, obviously not through the charms bar. But when you convert to UWP, probably what you want to do is make those functions, especially if they're important to your app, like share or something, make them more discoverable by actually building into your UI your own proper buttons UI. We've got loads of app bar buttons with every icon under the sun, so you easily, if you don't have to draw your own custom icons.
Just look on the symbol icon,
exactly. So the underlying code, the way that you interact with those, the search contract, for example, the share contract and that sort of thing, none of that changes.
No.
So your code doesn't have to change. It's just simply how the user discovers those functions. You need to build that into your UI a little bit. Lastly, but not leastly, just do some work to make sure you've got a beautiful UI. And we had a session yesterday on adaptive UI where we talked through all of these kind of options. So do some work to make sure that you're giving a top quality user experience to all your users, regardless of what device they're working on. So there you go. And share state in the cloud and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Talking about all that kind of great stuff. So, what about, let's just have a quick sidebar, if you like, a look at 8.1 universal apps. So what about those ones in terms of the porting effort? So they tended to have, the thing with 8.1 universal apps is you had the typical project structure where you had a phone head and you'd have a desktop head. But then the idea was that the majority of your code is sitting in that shared project.
That shared project was the one that had all your DTOs
project.
And logic.
Yeah, that's right. This is where you put everything. You could even put some pages in there, but mostly people would have the views in the heads. But then all your
view models
and your services and all your other logic down in the shared project. And at compile time, effectively did a block copy from the shared project.
You just do a copy,
up into the, you ended up with a binary for each of those heads. Now, you can still use shared projects in Visual Studio and UWP. There was a question before, I'm sorry I didn't answer it till now. What if you want to have an app that's where you are effectively supporting 8.1 targets and UWP targets all from the same solution. Yeah, absolutely. You
That's
can
possible,
do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you can do that. You end up with three heads, effectively. You'd have a UWP head, you'd have your Windows Phone 8.1 head, and you'd have your Windows 8.1 head. And you can still support all that and stick loads of common stuff into the shared project. Just in the shared project, you used to have those hash if Windows Phone app do this, hash else do the Windows app thing. You effectively have to turn that into a three-headed beast and say hash if Windows Phone app do that, hash if Windows app do this, hash if Windows underscore UWP app do the other.
Yeah.
And obviously the other is your universal app code.
And actually that's quite a valid point on some of the things that we've demoed. We've always demoed sort of a UWP with one project. But you're not really limited to just having one project. If you wanted to, you could still have, you know, some people like having class libraries and separate those out.
Yeah.
There's no harm in still having all that. You know,
you can have shared projects, you could have portable class libraries.
The only reason why we only have one project is because I suppose our demos are simple enough and it might be overkill to have like class libraries for
item. We don't want to make it look overcomplicated, do we? So, but yeah, you know, all the stuff, the way that you organize your
code,
the
way you usually do stuff is the same. Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, you just have to kind of that. This is the three kind of platform compiler conditionals that we've now got. Windows app, Windows Phone app, Windows underscore UWP is the new one. And inside that Windows UWP section, if you've got any shared code, obviously within that you might still need to do use the API information. You can still use those APIs to selectively have code that's targeting the extension SDKs. But you know, your app may not need that anyway.
No.
Right, so that was it.
Yeah,
that was it. We're taking you through, kind of give you an idea for the sort of experience for that. We looked at the migration paths, starting from different starting points on Windows 8.0.8.1 and Phone 8.0 and Phone 8.1, talking about those different things. Silverlight, there is this porting tool that's coming along, so hopefully that will ease that migration. We went through a worked example of taking that Contoso cookbook, moving that up and getting that working. There is that upgrade utility. If you want to contribute, I'd be very grateful. Let's make it as good as possible.
Yeah.
And then run through some of the kind of steps that you will experience. But, you know, obviously your experience, your mileage may vary. And
every scenario is going to be different.
Exactly.
We've shown you sort of one example.
Yeah.
I mean,
this
your
is
face.
Just a 50-minute session. Yeah. So, yeah. And then we talked a little bit about migrating HTML on universal apps.
Yeah.
All right. Good. So that was that. We will now take a little bit around about 10-minute break, and we'll be back at the half past the hour. And we're into the final session of this 2-day MVA, this Windows 10 Developer's Guide. We're going to now look at, and you're going to take us through the store and the app submission and some of the other factors,
all
that
cool
kind
stuff
of
that's
good
coming
stuff.
Up. Yep.
All right, good. So thanks for watching, and hopefully we'll see you in just 10 minutes or so. Thanks.